This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Governor Phil Scott says his administration has been holding off on making any significant changes to Vermont Health Connect, the state's healthcare exchange, until it was clear how Congress might repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. The governor says the demise of the Republican plan in the U.S. House last week is a signal that it might take a while for Congress to deal with this issue, so he's going to focus on some changes that lawmakers could consider next January.
Now that we see that the repeal and replace is not taking place, at least right now, I think there's a better approach that we can take. We're looking at all different types of approaches, and we'll come up with something that might be a little unique and maybe something that others throughout the country could take a look at and maybe follow. We'll see.
Have some of the previous problems at Vermont Health Connect been worked out? And what would be some of the possible changes that the Scott administration would like to consider? These are some of the questions we have for our guest today, Human Services Secretary Al Gobay. Al, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
Now, when you were the head of the Green Mountain Care Board, you said that you looked at some of the early problems at Vermont Health Connect, and you said that it was really a mess and that the whole situation undermined Vermonters' confidence in the ability of state government to tackle big issues. So give us an update now at how things stand at Vermont Health Connect. What problems have been ironed out? Which ones still remain?
Yeah, so I think the real question is that you got to say is, did I have any idea at that point that I'd be in charge of it? I mean, so these are tough jobs, and I respect tremendously the folks that serve with me to try to make this system that we have better every day. I think we need to take a step back and talk about, what is this thing called Vermont Health Connect, and is Vermont Health Connect even the right way to refer to it? You know, basically what the state did was create a computer that determines whether you're eligible for Medicaid or commercial insurance. And that's called integrated eligibility by our agency. And when the state did it, they did it in a way that was to use some commercial products, if you think of like Oracle's platform for the techies out there. But then we modified it and sort of worked on it and patched it in our own way. And so we built a system that is the only system like it in the world. And that's dangerous in computer land. And when folks think about Vermont Health Connect, I want you to think about it the right way. If you think about the eligibility platform that we built for Medicaid and for AHS's services and to determine qualified health plans, that's sort of like your iPhone. The Vermont Health Connect or the qualified health plan part of it is simply just an app that goes on your iPhone. And so when you heard the big numbers of what it cost to build this, that wasn't just for the app. That was for the entire technology platform. And so the question before us, and I think the governor's been right on this issue for a long time. The question before us is this platform that we built going to serve us well in the future? Or do we have to make a change? And so there's a couple lenses we like to look at it through. One, for the people that go on and try to use this, the Vermonters using this, does it work? And number two, does it work for Vermont taxpayers? And the system that we have right now has fundamental deficiencies with it that make it so it doesn't always work for the Vermont people using it. And we have a lot of folks working at the Agency of Human Services that do workarounds every day to try to make this work for people.
So what are some of those fundamental deficiencies?
Basically, if you think about eligibility, there's a bunch of rules that say, are you allowed to be on a Medicaid program? Or are you allowed to get a subsidy for a qualified health plan? And if you enter in any data wrong or if there's a change of circumstance or something changes, the computer is supposed to be able to take that into account and change your eligibility. It is not always able to do that. And then people have to go in and manually either enter information or correct things. And that's a very expensive proposition because you've paid both for the technology and for the people to do the work. And so the point that the governor is making is Do we want to keep investing in the technology that we've built, or do we want to come up with a new way of doing it with new technology or new partners? And so that's what we're looking at. And I also want to be clear for folks that there are pieces of it that are good and we may keep. And the whole world of technology is moving towards two things. One, modularity, meaning buying modules that already work. And number two, the cloud. And so we feel that we have to capitalize on that instead of trying to sort of fix what we already have that we've customized to the point that it's not, you know, it's not a traditional software module.
So if you look at changing things, changing the whole model, how does it change? The governor talked a couple days ago about tackling the whole Medicaid population. What are some thoughts or options that you could look at to deal with that?
Yeah, so, you know, basically what technology does is it takes what we would have done as humans and, you know, puts it into an executable software program. And so where you used to, you know, people like you and I, Bob, we remember filling out forms in triplicate. You know, you'd say, hey, I want to sign up for this program like LIHEAP or WIC or some other program of the Agency of Human Services. And it was very paper-centric. And over time, it became computer-centric. But we have a lot of different computer programs that run all of those programs. And the point is there a way to bring together some of those services so that we have basically an are-you-eligible platform for the Agency of Human Services? That's always been the goal of the iPhone that we built. And the point is that there are now companies, and we've met with several of them, that have ready-made solutions for some of these problems that are working around the United States. So the question is, how can you put this all together so that we don't suffer, you know, sort of what we went through, as you artfully described my take on it a few years ago.
And so would that be separating out some of these functions?
Sure. So like web access. Salesforce has a great web access program. You don't need to invent your own. You don't need to have people writing code. You can lease their program. That's just one example, and that may not be what we do, but there's certainly options, you know, like that. And that's just a module that you'd contract with.
You know, I wanted to go back to the Affordable Care Act, and President Trump says there's absolutely no doubt in his mind that this thing is going to implode, explode, whatever verb we want to use. And it's going to happen in the near future. Do you see any evidence of that in Vermont?
So it's just an interesting proposition. I mean, I think that I've been clear on this show while chair of the Green Mountain Care Board and also while secretary that healthcare costs rising beyond inflation is not a sustainable proposition. And just to, you know, as a history lesson, you know, prior to the Affordable Care Act, we were seeing rates for small businesses go up 15% almost every year. And, you know, now, you know, we'll see what they go up next year. But I haven't felt that, you know, healthcare was on a sustainable path for a long time. I don't know that it's just linked to Obamacare. I think the question is, and that's why we've talked about the all-payer model and hospital budgets and insurance rate setting. I mean, there has to be a concerted effort to work on making healthcare affordable for people. You know, that's independent of Obamacare.
And I wanted to go back to your possible changes for Medicaid to make sure that I understand it. I mean, basically now we're looking at a huge technological computer system that does many, many things. Vermont Health Connect is one of them. Are you suggesting that maybe you ought to pull the services of Vermont Health Connect out of that big system and have a smaller system running it?
So I want to be really clear about what I'm saying. We don't know exactly what we want to do. We're examining a bunch of alternatives. You know, you think of the qualified health plans as an app on the, you know, on the Medicaid platform. You know, you're seeing if you're eligible for what program. And so we could change that platform or parts of that platform for Medicaid and for the qualified health plans to determine your eligibility and then, you know, to allow you to purchase insurance. Definitely.
And how about at one point the governor was talking about maybe we should just join the federal exchange. Is that still an option?
It'll always, So let's be clear about when he said that. So he said that prior to the election. And then after the election, we all said, well, maybe we want to find out what's going to happen nationally before we do something like that. But the federal exchange is only for qualified health plans. And so that wouldn't solve our integrated eligibility issues with Medicaid. And so the bigger question here is, how do we want to determine if Vermonters are eligible for the programs that the state runs? And then part of that is the qualified health plan, but not the majority by any stretch, only about 5%.
Well, joining us now to discuss possible changes to Vermont Health Connect is the president of Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Vermont, Don George. Don, welcome back to the program.
Well, thank you for having me.
So, Don, what's your opinion today about how Vermont Health Connect is working?
Well, in 2017, we're off to a much smoother start than we were in 2016. In the open enrollment period in which our customers can make any changes to their current program or enroll for the first time, it begins in November and runs through the end of January. This was Vermont Health Connect's first fully automated open enrollment. And all the customer renewal and changes were completed on time. You know, in 2016, many of the customer renewal changes were not completed until well into the calendar year. And in addition, the quality of the enrollment information is far higher. And the errors that we do have are being corrected much more quickly. So that is an aspect of Vermont Health Connect that is going much better and is vastly improved. There still are some things that I think are continued to be struggles for customers of Vermont Health Connect, though.
And what would those be?
Well, I think one of the areas where customers continue to struggle is with Vermont Health Connect's billing and payment processes. The phone calls to Blue Cross Blue Shield about Vermont Health Connect billing and payment issues have increased over the past year. The source of those errors really relate to differences in enrollment information that exist at Vermont Health Connect, and that information being different from Vermont Health Connect's billing vendor, so that the information we receive that we send out to our customers will be incorrect based on those differences. So that continues to be an issue for customers.
So as you look at the landscape, Don, are there some changes that you would like to see made to Vermont Health Connect that you think would solve some of these problems?
Well, I think that there have been changes that have been made in both the launch of Vermont Health Connect and then since Vermont Health Connect was launched. I mean, we never built what was referred to under the Affordable Care Act as the SHOP, which is the Small Business Exchange. From the beginning of the exchange in 2014, all small businesses have enrolled directly with Blue Cross Blue Shield of Vermont or MVP Health Plan. Now, individuals who do not receive a subsidy are allowed to enroll directly through their health plan. And I think that this has always been, I help the small businesses and out of those individuals. The challenge that I think remains for Vermont Health Connect is that it is the platform for the integrated eligibility for Medicaid and other state programs, but it is also the platform that is responsible under the Affordable Care Act for calculating the subsidies for a small number of those who are on qualified health plans that are availing themselves to federal subsidies. That's the piece that for which customers are still struggling and which we still need to see improvements. The challenge for Vermont Health Connect is even in some of the areas in which we see improvements, they are largely still manual processes, and it takes the commitment of resources in keeping current with those manual processes. And if you don't and you fall behind, they become increasingly burdensome to the customers that are still on Vermont Health Connect.
Don, do you think it'd be helpful if the state got out of the billing business?
Well, the Vermont Health Connect needs to be in the business of calculating the subsidies for those that are eligible under the Affordable Care Act. and they need, and they are currently the source of record for that information. So if they get out of the billing business, for example, it's been proposed or suggested that Blue Cross Blue Shield could do the billing, but we would be relying on information that's coming from Vermont Health Connect and Vermont Health Connect's billing vendor, and that information is incorrect. So if that information is incorrect at its source, whatever organization does the billing is going to be sending out incorrect information, and nothing has been improved for the customers.
Don, I did want to ask you about one aspect of the health care plan that was considered by House Republicans last week. One of the central ideas seems to be to allow consumers to buy insurance across state lines and also to reduce the mandated benefit package. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, there are two pieces to that. One is the in the House bill that was the American Health Care Act, that did actually did not include any provisions that would have changed our state-based regulatory process for health insurance or allow health insurance companies to sell products across state lines. That was under the president's sequencing of proposals. He referred to the bill was sort of step one of a three-step process. And so it's presumed that his proposal to sell health insurance across state lines was going to be part of a step two or step three. And, of course, we didn't get that. Step one was not accomplished. So we're left wondering now where and when that might be part of the process. There was in the bill, a proposal to roll back or provide states with the discretion to not offer some of the wellness and the mandated benefits that were included in the Affordable Care Act. And I think that, you know, there's two different ways to look at that. One is that by pulling some of those benefits, it would reduce the cost of the overall premiums, make the products, as they were being characterized in Washington, more affordable. By the same token, the benefits in there to allow people to be able to get preventive services without incurring a copayment or a deductible are an incentive for people to get those preventive services and tests at a time in which they need them. And long-term, we know that that's going to have a deterrent effect on healthcare costs and bring costs down. So it's the two sides of the story there. And ultimately, I think, you know, we're better off paying for preventive services that ultimately are going to contribute to controlling healthcare costs.
Don George, president of Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Vermont, many thanks for being on the program today.
Well, thank you for having me, Bob.
So, Al, this idea of buying insurance across state line, what would it do to some consumer protections in Vermont?
Well, I think that's a great question. I mean, I think what people don't understand is that, you know, the federal government determined long ago that the regulation of healthcare is a local concern, and that means a state concern. So when you think of the FAA, you know, they govern everything to do with airlines and airports, and they basically tell everyone what to do. And, you know, they're very good at that. But they've let states do that with healthcare. And so to suddenly say they're going to have something that's capable of going across state lines, you would need to work through all the issues of differences in community rating, differences in regulation, contracting with provider groups, size of networks. I mean, there's a lot to consider. And I'm not exactly sure how they would go about that, but it would be, you know, this is a devil in the details thing. It's not necessarily I'm not saying it's a bad idea. It might be a great idea, but you'd have to get the details right or it just wouldn't work.
Let's talk to Hillary, who's calling from Rutland. Hi, Hillary. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely.
My question is, it seems like Vermont has been hiring a lot of outside consultants to help them with this problem, since it's a big and complex one, and that they were provided a product that really didn't work at a functional level on the back end and also didn't really work on the front end level for the people sort of struggling with it with the end of the mouse. And wondering, I guess what I'd like to know is, what are they doing to make sure that whatever sort of solutions that they are looking at now ensure that they work at that functional level and also at that front end user level?
So, Hillary, those are fantastic questions. You know, some of the companies that we dealt with when this was first, you know, designed and just began have actually even gone out of business because of this, some of the failures of IT, healthcare IT across the United States. And so the question is, if we're going to partner with somebody new, how do we know they're going to be around and create a reliable product? And the answer, I think, is we would want to partner with somebody who's already doing this. You know, what we did with Vermont Health Connect is we sort of built our own. We used some components that were of a known quantity, and then we did workarounds and patches to make it work for us. The problem with that is, you know, you think about your iPhone, or your Samsung, you go to do an update, you know, you hit software update and plug it into the wall and it updates. Well, when you build your own software, you can't. That just doesn't work that way anymore. And so what we would want is a company that's been in whatever type of module we buy to give us, you know, to improve a piece of this. Because let's remember that this integrated eligibility platform that houses Vermont Health Connect is not just one thing. It's a bunch of things, and we can upgrade different modules of it at different times. And we should just make sure that people have done it before and that they can show us a working product. Because that's their risk at that point and not the state's, because I couldn't agree with you more that that's not the way to go again.
Today in the program, we're looking at possible changes to Vermont Health Connect, the state's healthcare exchange. This is Vermont Edition on VPR.
We could all be better listeners of podcasts, that is. There are so many great shows out there just waiting to be discovered. So this month, we're asking you to get the word out about podcasts worth listening to. Tell a friend or a family member about a show you think they would really love. Then tell us about it by using the hashtag TryPod. That's T-R-Y pod, like trying podcasts, get it? You can also check out what other people have recommended and find something new for yourself by searching that hashtag. Happy listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Today in the program, we're looking at possible changes to Vermont Health Connect, the state's healthcare exchange. Our guest in studio is Al Gobay, Secretary of the Agency of Human Services in the Scott administration. We did get this email, Al, from Representative Tom Stevens, who writes, "Vermont was just named the best healthcare system in the country. When we talk about making adjustments, are we talking about dismantling elements of a system that is now working or making a maturing system even better?"
Representative Stevens, I am so psyched that you brought something really positive up, because we can focus on just getting better, which could be considered negative at times. No, I think that the governor's been clear that he doesn't want to go backwards on some of the great work that we've been able to do in our state. And for myself personally, I certainly wasn't a part of the Green Mountain Care Board for all those years, and now the enthusiastic secretary of the Agency of Human Services to allow that to happen. I think what we're talking about is, technology is moving forward so fast, and, you know, how do we make it work for us in a way that is more efficient, doesn't cost taxpayers as much money, you know, doesn't require so many workarounds, isn't frustrating for either our insurers or for the customers that actually use it. But no, this is just with an eye toward improvement. But the Commonwealth Fund did come out and name us number one and a whole bunch of categories that they take a look at. And Vermonters should know that, number one, and they should be proud of that.
Well, joining us now to discuss this issue is Mike Fisher, who's the state's healthcare advocate and a former lawmaker who played a major role in drafting the bill that created Vermont Health Connect. Mike, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Bob. Good afternoon, Al.
Hey, how are you?
So, Mike, what are your thoughts about the way Vermont Health Connect is operating these days?
I think a lot like both Al and Don George have described the current state. I would say similar words about how far we've come and how much better the system is functioning. And that's, you know, been proven by the number of Vermonters that move through the system, re-enrollment, manage changes in their lives without major hassles.
And what are some of the most common questions or concerns that people have who call your office on this issue?
Of course, there's another side to that story, and that's the next sentiment that we need to keep a focus on. We get about 1,000 calls a quarter from Vermonters who are having access to care problems. About 40% of those calls are problems with Vermont Health Connect. Now, many of those problems, very much in line with what Don George said, many of those problems are about billing and payment issues. So when I hear words from the governor or from Al Gobay about seeking to improve the system or looking for new ways to deliver the service, I'm happy to engage in measuring those those proposals against how do we make the system better for Vermonters.
Mike, what kind of changes would you like to see made as the Scott administration considers changes? What kind of proposals might you offer?
Well, I'm of course not on the technical side, and I don't know what is being entertained by the Scott administration. So I think what I can say is that we will engage with the governor's office and with policymakers to evaluate any proposed changes based on whether it will make the system function better for enrollment and re-enrollment, whether it will at least maintain Vermonters' access to federal and Vermont supports, and whether it will manage the transitions that people make between commercial plans and Medicaid, and even the complexity for families who have family members that are on one of those systems and other family members that are on the others. This is a complex system, and so as the details get rolled out by the Scott administration, we will measure those. We will look at those details based on how they will address those issues.
As I mentioned when I introduced you, Mike, you were very involved in the passage of the healthcare law that created Vermont Health Connect. As you look back on it now, is there anything you would do differently?
Oh man,
this is your moment, Mike.
I have very distinct memories of moments of hearing what was proposed and thinking, wow, it better work, and being there watching it unroll and unfold and seeing the deep challenges that the system we had just bought had, and it goes to a conversation you had a moment ago about contracting with new entities, and how do we make sure that those entities are going to stick around and are giving us a really good product. I don't disagree with what Al, Secretary Gobay, said a few moments ago about making sure that we're contracting with people who have a track record of really making it work.
And if I could, I think, Mike, when you look back to that time, there wasn't anybody who'd ever done this before. So it wasn't the opportunity to say, is there a Honda, or is there a Toyota, or is there a General Motors option, of this, car you're buying. It hadn't been done before. And, that was the problem that the United States saw, not just Vermont.
That's exactly right. In fact, I remember, it being stated very clearly, we were using a contractor that was building the federal exchange. How could it go wrong?
Right.
That's right. Mike Fisher is Vermont's healthcare advocate. Mike, many thanks for being on the program today.
Thank you very much.
And Al, we've got this email from Marg who wants to know, do you think Vermont will ever have a single payer system? Would that help?
So I've been through this. I don't, and I don't say that to be provocative. I say that because I've been through the conversation. I've done the math. I've studied the issue intently. Unless something was to change at the federal level that I can't anticipate, it's so hard to deal with the fact that we have 6 healthcare systems in this country. We have Medicaid, we have Medicare, we have the VA, we have ERISA, which is big company healthcare, if you want to call it that. We have Obamacare, and we have the Indian Health Service. And there's probably some others, but we have basically 6. And states can't unwrap and untie and deal with all those rules to try to do it ourselves in an affordable way. It's just it's a complicated issue.
You know, Senator Bernie Sanders has legislation, I think he calls it Medicare for All, that says if you want to join Medicare at any age, you can. You don't have to. If you want to buy private insurance, go right ahead. But if you want to sign up for federal Medicare at any age, you'd be free to do that. What kind of impact would that have?
See, now you're trying to get me in trouble here. So I'll say this. I don't know what impact that would have. I haven't studied what Bernie's proposing. But what I will say is that we spend about 70 cents of every healthcare dollar as a part of either federal or state monies, meaning almost 70% of our system is government funded. And yet we think that we talk about it like, oh, we would never have a publicly funded system. We have more public dollars in our system than Canada does because they don't do prescription drugs. And so, you know, I think the question is, you know, hey, I'll be the optimist here. Could President Trump actually work with Congress and with all of Congress to come up with something that is that uses those 70 cents on the dollar better for the American people? I hope so. Let me say that. I think it can be done much better.
We got this email from Z who would like to know, what timeline are you looking at to change Vermont Health Connect? Would this affect open enrollment periods in 2018?
So I want to be clear here. We do not have a timeline. The governor the governor's a great boss. You know, governors can be politicians. Governors can, you know, be great speech givers. But, you know, Governor Scott's a great boss. And what he's saying to us is, you know, this is basically like, hey, I want options and I want to know what we're doing, you know, by next year. But no, we would not affect – we've worked so hard to make open enrollment at least as good as it was this year and hopefully better for next year. We don't want to mess that up. This would all be planning for the future. So, no.
Now, you've been chairman of the Green Mountain Care Board. Now you're secretary of the Agency of Human Services. How do those two jobs compare in your ability to influence and affect Vermont's healthcare future?
That's a great question. So the Green Mountain Care Board was sort of like being an outsider to government. You know, I wasn't a senator, I wasn't a representative, and I wasn't part of the governor's staff. And so we were always trying to figure out what was going on and chart a path. And sometimes it felt like we were in the mainstream and sometimes it felt like we were out in the woods. As being the secretary of the Agency of Human Services, it's a giant operation with, you know, 4,000 people, you know, and it's an amazing place with amazingly talented people that that if you just get everyone rowing in the same direction, you can just feel the ability to help Vermonters. So
a lot of important issues we'll be following in the weeks and months ahead. Human Services Secretary Al Gobay, many thanks for being on the program today.
Thanks for having me.
And coming up next, we've got the latest installment of Dorothy's List. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. It's time now for Dorothy's List, our monthly feature about the books nominated for Vermont's Dorothy Canfield Fisher Children's Book Award. Today, VPR's Amy Noyes takes us to West Paulet, where 6th graders at the Meadowee Community School are reading a debut novel by author Alex Gino.
The book is called George, which is also the name of the main character, but author Alex Gino refers to it as Melissa's story. George is a fourth grader who secretly thinks of herself as Melissa. The book's stated message is be who you are, and the author's dedication reads, to you, for when you felt different. The sixth graders at the Meadowee Community School wrote a spoken word poem inspired by that dedication.
Has there ever been a time when you felt different?
Yes.
When I'm called names.
When I'm called short.
When I'm writing and I'm the one who understands a complicated pattern.
When I am at school.
When I came back from the Women's March because it was inspirational and empowering.
When I was growing up because my clothes didn't match.
When I gave insulin and...
We played the entire poem for the author of George, and Gina was impressed.
Wow. That was beautiful. Some of the ones that resonated most were the ones that, like, I connected with. Like, my clothes don't match. I was like, oh, yeah. And then there were some kids who took it as a positive. Like, I felt different because I was first place. That was just beautiful.
In addition to sharing their poem, the sixth graders from the Meadowee Community School have a lot of questions for the author, including this one from Abby McChesney.
Do you have a personal connection to this book? Like, do you know someone closely that is transgender, or are you transgender?
We put the students' questions to the author, and while that one was a hard question for Abby to ask, it wasn't so hard for Gino to answer.
I am transgender, and yet this book is not autobiographical. It is influenced by my life, but I do want to point out that Melissa and I are very different in a lot of ways, and we're in fact different in how we're transgender. Melissa is a trans girl. She is binary, and the category girl works very well for her. She loves being a girl. I'm genderqueer. Neither girl nor boy really has ever worked well for me.
And Gino points out another big difference.
We're also different in that Melissa is growing up now, which means that she has access to language and information and ideas that I didn't as a kid. So I didn't grow up knowing that I was trans. I grew up knowing that I was different. I grew up knowing that that things weren't quite connecting, but we have very different growing up experiences.
Gino uses the personal pronoun they instead of he or she to describe themselves, and this caught sixth grader Brett Rosenbauer's attention. Brett wondered why the character in George isn't genderqueer, too.
I noticed you would like people to use the pronoun they. Why did you not make George as a character who is not either common gender?
I love that question. To be frank and honest, I started writing this book in 2003, and culture was different then, and it was, in fact, hard for me to envision someone who was genderqueer or someone who was non-binary, gender nonconforming, being aware of themselves in fourth grade. And clearly I'm wrong on that. Looking at kids who are out and aware of themselves now, what I was seeing was that it would be more likely that a trans girl would be self-aware.
Here's author Alex Gino reading from George.
She wiggled the key until it clicked into place. Stumbling inside, she called out, "Hello?" No lights were on. Still, George needed to be certain the house was empty. The door of Mom's room was open and the bed sheets were flat. Scott's room was unoccupied as well. Sure that she was alone, George went into the third bedroom, opened the closet door, and surveyed the pile of stuffed animals and assorted toys inside. They were undisturbed. Mom complained that George hadn't played with any of the toys in years and said that they should be donated to needy families. But George knew they were needed here to guard her most prized and secret collection. Fishing beneath the teddy bears and fluffy bunnies, George felt for a flat denim bag. Once she had it in hand, she ran to the bathroom, shut the door, and turned the lock. Clutching the bag in tightly wrapped arms, George slid to the ground. As she tipped the denim bag on its side, the silky, slippery pages of a dozen magazines fell out onto the tiled bathroom floor. Covers promised how to have perfect skin, 12 fresh summer haircuts, how to tell a hottie you like him, and wild winter wardrobes.
George imagines the girls in those teen magazines are her friends, and they know her as Melissa. In real life, George's best friend is a girl named Kelly, And while Kelly is a good friend to George, she doesn't know about Melissa. Neither does anyone else in George's real life. Sixth grader Harlow Rosemary Quayle asks how the story came together for the author.
So I was wondering if there was like a special or funny moment when you first thought of the idea for the book, like a special ding moment.
The first moment that came to me in the book is actually the very last scene in the book. And I don't want to give away spoilers, but it's a beautiful scene. It's in a scene of friendship. And what I needed to do as a writer was to figure out how could I make the rest of this story happen so that I could get to that beautiful crystal moment at the end. So, in fact, the very notion of the book was itself a ding moment.
School is sometimes a hard place for George to be. George is constantly being grouped with the boys, even though inside she knows she's a girl. And there was one routine at George's school that caught sixth grader Sophia Russo by surprise.
Why did you choose to make two separate lines, a girl's line and a boy's line, for when the class would dismiss to recess or just dismiss from school? I've never heard of a place that's done that, and that really caught my attention when I read it.
I love questions like this because I grew up with girls' lines and boys' lines, and I don't remember a school that I didn't do that in. And so the fact that you've never heard of that tells me that we are making progress. And when I think about what my mom talks about is she got sent home from school for not wearing a skirt in the New York City public school system. And I had boys' lines and girls' lines, but we could wear whatever we want. And now you don't know what a girl's line or a boy's line is. That's just beautiful. I just wrote it in there because that was my normative experience. And to know that there are places that don't do that anymore is good for all of us.
School really starts to feel unfair to George when her teacher announces tryouts for a class play based on Charlotte's Web. Some boys in George's class make fun of her for crying when Charlotte dies. Then, although George really wants to be Charlotte in the play, the teacher says only girls are allowed to try out for that part.
Why did you choose the book Charlotte's Web for the play?
That's sixth grader Lexi Carey's question for Gino.
I started with Charlotte's Web as the book for the play because that's the book that I cried at in school. It's probably the most autobiographical part of the book. And the way I remember it, I was the only one who cried. And it was one of the first moments where I really felt different from the people around me. From there, it turned out to fit in very well in a lot of ways. It's a book about friendship. It's a book about a girl in the shadows. You know, Charlotte is a girl. She's a spider. And people don't see her as a girl. They see her as an icky thing. And it's a book about doing something good for your friends, even if you don't get anything out of it.
A selfless act of friendship to help a friend who feels different is part of the message that Gino delivers in the novel George. Back at the Meadowee Community School in West Pollet, friends are working together to help each other express their differences. As they perform their spoken word poem and each student proclaims a time they felt different, they're actually reading a line written by one of their classmates.
When I was on the first place podium.
When I'm hunting because I'm accepted by nature, learning.
When I went to Japan, I did not look like anyone.
When I was at a transgender wedding.
When I am at school.
When I was at the skateboard park, everyone there was on a skateboard and I was on a bike.
When I got diagnosed with diabetes.
Has there ever been a time when you have felt different?
Every day. I feel different every day because I am my own person.
For VPR News, I'm Amy Noyes.
The book is George by Alex Gino. Thanks to Kelly Allfeld and Patty Leah at the Meadowway Community School. Thanks also to the studios of Youth Radio in Oakland, California for facilitating our interview with Gino. Today is Transgender Day of Visibility, and you can find a link to more information at vpr.net/Dorothy's List. And that's our show for today. If you have a comment you'd like to share, leave us a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. You can also find us on Facebook or tweet us at Vermont Edition. Recent content from Vermont Edition is available in the NPR One app. Vermont Edition is produced by Rick Sengary, Sam Gale Rosen, and Meg Malone. Jake Rusnak directed the program. Our executive producer is Patty Daniels. I'm Bob Kinzel. Thanks for listening.